about the Vaishnava Samadhis of Vrindavan, by Mahanidhi Swami. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur. In her childhood, Narayani Devi, niece of Srivas Pandit, right, became mad with love of God upon receiving the mercy of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. She got some prasadam remnants from the Lord, right? Later, she gave birth to Vrindavan Das, who was the last disciple of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. On his guru's order, he wrote Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. It is practically a law among Vaishnava writers like Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj, and Vrindavan Das Thakur to always keep themselves in the background. They never mention anything about their family lineage or personal history. The authors of the best written and most relishable verses collected in Sri Rupa Goswami's Patyavali remain unknown. During the 16th century, entire books of exceptional transcendental prose and poetry were penned by prideless Vaishnavas, preferring to remain anonymous. Feeling utmost humility, such Vaishnava writers expressed themselves only in relation to their preceptors. Krishna Das Kaviraj glorifies his gurus, and at the end of each chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Rupa Raghunatha Pade Yada Asa Chaitanya Charitamrita Kahe Krishna Das, praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunatha, always desiring the mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following their footsteps. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami shows his supreme homage and gratitude by honoring Vrindavan Das Thakur with the appellation Vyasa. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya 20.82, Vrindavan Das Thakur, quote, Vrindavan Das Thakur is Lord Nityananda's favorite devotee, and therefore he is the original Vyasadeva in describing the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So not only is he Srila Vyasadeva, but he's also Lord Nityananda's favorite devotee. I didn't catch that before. It's very important. Also, it's not only that he's known as the Srila Vyasadeva of Chaitanya Leela, but he actually is Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Prabhupada says that the Gaur Ganodesha Deepika by Kavi Karnapur is authoritative. So accepting that, we have to accept that who was Srila Vyasadeva in Chaitanya Leela, in Krishna Leela, has become Vrindavan Das Thakur in Chaitanya Leela. It's the same personality. The humble heart of Krishna Das Kaviraj pours out more praises of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Quote, hearing Chaitanya Bhagavat destroys all misfortune. By reading Chaitanya Bhagavat, one will understand the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and he will attain the highest perfection of knowledge, pure love of Krishna. Since such a wonderful book could not be written by a human being, it seems that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself has spoken it through the mouth of Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur. I offer millions of respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of Vrindavan Das Thakur. By compiling such a valuable book, he has delivered everyone from the cycle of birth and death. It's a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 8, text 35 and 40. At Mama Gachchi in Modadrumadvip, Navadvip, Vrindavan Das Thakur established deities of Nitai Gauranga and Sri Jagannath Dev. He lived there as a celibate and worshipped his beloved deities. Vrindavan Das Thakur had many disciples, including Gopinath Brahmachari, a descendant of Sri Keshava Bharati. In Krishna's pastimes, Vrindavan Das Thakur is Srila Vyasadeva. His samadhi is in the 64 samadhis area. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur ki jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Beginning a new chapter, chapter 5, in the last canto, which of course is the 12th canto. The title of the chapter, Shukadeva Goswami's Final Instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. This is the denouement, or the conclusion of the narrative of aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is all based on Maharaj Parikshit's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam as presented by Srila Shukadeva Goswami in 7 days. So there's a chapter summary, and I'll read the chapter summary. I think I have the prerogative of making some comments on the summary, which is fortunate because the purport is very, very short for the first verse. But I'll also say something about the first verse in particular. But first, we'll have a more general overview of the chapter and try to say something about that. This chapter explains how King Parikshit's fear of death from the snake bird, Takshaka, was averted by Shukadeva Goswami's brief instructions on the Absolute Truth. Having in the last chapter described the four processes of annihilation that act in this material world, Srila Shukadeva Goswami now reminds Parikshit Maharaj how he had previously, in the third canto, discussed the measurement of time and of the various millennia of universal history. During a single day of Lord Brahma, constituting 1,000 cycles of four ages, 14 different manus rule and die. Thus, death is unavoidable for every embodied being. But the soul itself never dies, being entirely distinct from the material body. Srila Shukadeva Goswami then states that in Srimad Bhagavatam, he has repeatedly chanted the glories of the Supreme Soul, Lord Sri Hari, from whose satisfaction Brahma takes birth, and from whose anger Rudra is born. The idea, quote, I will die, is simply the mentality of animals, because the soul does not undergo the bodily phases of previous non-existence, birth, existence, and death. When the body's subtle mental covering is destroyed by transcendental knowledge, the soul within the body again exhibits his original identity. Just as the temporal existence of a lamp comes about by the combination of oil, the vessel, the wick, and the fire, the material body comes about by the amalgamation of the three modes of nature. So who could define amalgamate, or amalgamation means coming together, like the combination, we can say? Mixed together, or combination, something, okay. So it's the amalgamation of the three modes of material nature. The material body appears at birth and displays life for some time. Finally, the combination of material modes dissolves and the body undergoes death, a phenomenon similar to the extinguishing of a lamp. Shukadeva addresses the king, saying, you should fix yourself in meditation upon Lord Vasudeva, and thus the bite of the snake bird will not affect you. Om Gyanatim Ananda Shah, Tananjana Salakaya, Chakshun Militam Yena, Tasma Shri Guru Vinamaha. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we'll make some comments on the summary. This is it's like a very tall order, actually, to be able to do what Maharaj Brihat has accomplished. He'll tell Shukadev, "I'm ready. I have no fear. I'm ready for death. You can go now. I'm fine. By your instructions, I now have absolutely no fear of death." So of course, even at the beginning, in the first canto, Maharaj Brihat, Tanmo Payatam Prativanti Vipra Ganga Chadevi, what is it? Then he says that I'm not, O Brahmanas, please accept me as a surrendered soul. I'm surrendered to Ganga. In other words, he's ready to, sometimes in Sanskrit, to die means to go in the Ganga, the body goes in the Ganga. Because I have already taken shelter of lotus feet of the Lord. Let the snake bird, or whatever magical thing, kuhakas, that the Brahmana, the Dvija, actually he's Brahma Bandhu, speaking about Sringi, has created, let it bite me at once, the satpalam. Gayati Gata. Just continue chanting the glories. My only request, I'm not asking you to postpone the arrival of the snake bird or undo that. Actually, Maharaj Brihat could have undone that himself, but he accepted the curse. He felt himself to be offensive. We're hearing about how the Vaishnava was so humble and so self-effacing. But my only request is just keep chanting the glories of Lord Vishnu. That's all. And then Shukadeva Goswami arrives, and for 7 days, he very expertly chants the glories in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a very tall order. How would we deal with that? This is sort of like an existential situation, because we're all Miyamananam. You hear Maharaj Brihat is on the verge of death, and we say, "Oof, when I'm more advanced, it's all right. But for now, I'm really glad I'm not in that situation. I'm glad that I didn't get condemned." And but there's that verse in Bhagavatam that says that everyone is exactly like a prisoner being led. Agatam Niyamanasya, being led to the place of execution. Givaseva Natushtita. How could Konvarta Sukhyat Yenam Kamo Va Mrityur Antike? Antike means close. Death is so close. How can anybody derive any type of pleasure or happiness or even peace from the pleasures of this world, when we're all exactly like a prisoner being led to the place of execution? In the purport, it's stated there that, this 11th canto, that it is a custom around the world to provide a very sumptuous meal to the condemned man, or sometimes lady, mostly the men who get executed, the night before. But very rarely does the prisoner really get, he can get anything he wants, you know, whatever he wants. They got all these cooks standing by, or they somehow or another, they provide him whatever he asks for, as much as he wants, all the things he couldn't get when he was in jail. You know, you can imagine it would be a great, exciting moment. But, you know, unless he's totally crazy, how could he relish it? Because every bite is just a reminder that at 6 o'clock in the morning, I got to sit on that chair there, I'm going to put all these electric stuff on me, and I'm going to fry, or I'm going to get hung, or I'm going to take poison, or I'm going to get the gas chamber, or so many ways. So we also have to leave the body in a whole variety of exciting different ways. And it's not about way in the future. Even if you didn't get old like me, it's not, it's that we're all Riyamanana. That's what Prabhupada said. Actually, everybody is really very old. What does old mean? Actually, my my paternal grandmother when I was, I got initiated into philosophy at the age of 4 years old. I wish I stuck with it steadily, but anyway. 4 years old, I had realization. I asked my grandmother, do you want to hear the story? It's very personal. Is it all right to say that? Very personal story. We weren't so rich. I was sharing a room with my older sister and Grandma Frida, her name was. So one day, as an innocent child, I said, Grandma, why do you wear ugly black shoes? Child can get away with asking questions like that. And she said, oh, those are old ladies' shoes. So children are very inquisitive. So I said, what does it old mean? And my grandmother gave exactly the same answer that Prabhupada would give. Old means that you're about to die soon. So guess what my next question was? What does it mean, this dying? What is that? Completely innocent, right? And she said, well, then she gave a nonsense answer. She just, in one sense, it was true, but it wasn't very complete at all. She just said, death means everything is dark. You don't feel anything. You don't see anything. You don't breathe. It's just dark, and you're just like, you practically, you're no longer existing, and you're just, she kind of went into a whole negative explanation. And when I heard that, I remember later in the afternoon, I was riding my tricycle to the corner in Brooklyn, New York, and I just stopped. It was like the loneliness of a long-distance runner. I just stopped the bicycle and didn't do anything. I just sat there, and I was totally depressed. Just the fact that this has to happen to me, too, this idea of dying and just like going to this dark place and not existing really. And for 3 nights, I couldn't sleep. But then, then I kind of got nicely distracted by material games and sports and toys and fighting and different other pastimes that we have when we're young like that. We're 4 years old. So that type of shocking discovery, that should be something that we don't distance ourselves from. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanu. And one should always be aware of the miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. It's not something optional. It's mandatory. That it's one of the items of knowledge. To have real knowledge, any real philosophy, the word there is darshan. Darshan means like a philosophy or a school of philosophy, right? So any darshan worthy of a name should have that darshan, dukkha doshana darshan, should have that, should encompass the imminence of death, and certainly what helps us become more detached. Now, it's interesting that statement that that it's a very strong statement in summary. It says that that anyone who thinks that I am going to die is just like animal consciousness. Where is that? The spirit soul doesn't die. The idea that I will die is simply the mentality of animals. Now, there's another side to that. It's kind of a two-step operation. Yes, because we're not these bodies. At the beginning of chapter 2 in Bhagavad Gita, the difference between the body and the soul never dies, can't be cut by any weapon or burnt by fire, etc., etc. Very nice. And if we don't assimilate that understanding, then we have this animalistic idea that I'm going to die. But actually, I'm not trying to contradict what was said there, but it's a kind of a very high level, it's very demanding, that it's a very tall order, that if you think that anyone who thinks I'm going to die is just like animal. Actually, the animals don't think like that. The distinct facility of human life, there was this philosophy, Heidegger. So he talked about authenticity, authentic being, at least in the context of human being, is the awareness, being towards death. That's a prerogative of the human being. But hanya hani bhutani gachanti hayamaliyam sheshak stava ichchanti kimas chayada takparam yaksha, asked Maharaj Yudhisthira 100 questions, was it? And this was one of them. What is the most wonderful thing in the world? He didn't say cauliflower pakoras or the Eiffel Tower or so many things like that. He said the most one, he got it spot on. He said the most wonderful thing in the world is that in spite of the fact that at every moment thousands of living entities are dying, leaving their bodies, practically those who still have not yet died, they think, I'm not going to die. That's the most wonderful thing in the world. Now we may say that, well, you know, most people, you say, do you know you're going to die? Do you know, man is mortal? Do you know that you're, you know, you're, of course. But it's one thing, pashyanapi na pashyati deha patra kalatra dish. What is it? Asatspapi, sanyash, atma sanyash prasatspapi. They take shelter of fallible soldiers, like the body itself, most fallible, compared to a ghee, like a lamp that just temporarily is assembled, amalgamated, but then when it comes apart, the flame goes out for good. I remember when my material father was passing away, you know, we live in such a mechanical, technological era. I mean, it's off the scale, as they say. And the nurse said, yes, she said, yes, his system is shutting down. It's like my father, just a computer, you know, his system is shutting down. So, yes, the system will shut down, that system that we're falsely identifying with. And the problem is that we don't take it seriously. Again, that whole idea that we're really being led to the place of execution, it's actually literally true. I mean, literally, not okay, not in all the detail, but the essence is completely true. It's like a material, in this material world. So I'm not taking exception to this statement, but it's actually a good thing. It's not exactly animal-like to think that I'm going to die, because the animals don't think like that until the axe is right over their head. Prabhupada would also often give the example of the slaughterhouse, and the animals keep sniffing around and trying to eat something, or, you know, just like divert their attention. And even though they're right online, and but until the axe is right there, then they don't. So we shouldn't be like that. In other words, before we get to that point where we realize I'm not this body and I'm not going to die, najayate miyate vaka, etc., before we get to that point, we first have to have that darshan. We have to have a realization that the way I had when I was 4 years old, you know, or Nietzsche said that maturity is to regain the seriousness we had as a child at play. So to actually realize that live with that, authentic living, being towards death, as the philosopher said. Was I going to say anything else? Yeah, there are many. Actually, the Bhagavatam itself is one verse in the 11th canto, chapter 20, text 16, there's a whole right place, Chidjamanam, Budvayor, Bhaya Bipatu. Up to that point, the verse explains that seeing that the passing of a whole the day and Ratra, the night, is cutting down one's duration of life, one should be shaken by fear. His body should shake in fear. This verse is recommending that maybe we're not at that transcendental platform yet, but it's a healthy fear in that sense. And then the verse kind of cuts to the chase and goes on to state that Mukta, what is it? Parambudva, Mukta Sangha, Mukti. When is in that state, he has more of a tendency to take shelter of the Lord and therefore become detached. Niriha Upashamyati, and achieves perfect peace. It seems like there's a few steps missing, you know, in between, but it does give us a basis for an impetus to surrender, and by such surrender, then that's the peace formula. Then we have perfect peace. We become detached and actually peaceful because we, by surrendering to the Lord, then self-realization is included in the package, for sure. It's also a nice realization by Gajendra the elephant. He states that those who I'll just read the English translation. The Supreme Person, as 8th canto, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but he is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone ready to swallow him, if one whose fears this serpent seeks shelter of the Lord gives him protection, for even death runs away in fear of the Lord. I therefore surrender unto him, the great and powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone. Of course, Gajendra had realization. It wasn't exactly a serpent, but it was a huge crocodile was eating him alive by grasping with his teeth the leg of Gajendra. And in that state, he was able to utter this whole series of beautiful prayers, including this one. Also in the summary, it's mentioned that comparing the births of Lord Brahma and that of Lord Shiva. So Lord Brahma was born out of the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. I don't exactly understand that. I didn't have time to research it, but you could think about that. More tangible for us is the obvious second description, that how Lord Shiva is born out of his anger. And I think in this case, the anger is referring to the anger of Lord Brahma. So, as you know, Lord Brahma, most of you know, Lord Brahma became angry, but he was holding it in. But the anger was still there, subtly. So it came out of his forehead. That was a lot of amazing births took place from Lord Brahma, and that was a Rudra, and Rudranam Shankarashchasmi. So amongst the 11 Rudras, I am Shiva, Mahadev. So out of the anger, why was he angry? Because the four Kumaras didn't want to become grihasthas. They wanted to remain celibate. And not, of course, Lord Brahma had to respect that, but at the same time it was frustrating for him. So Prabhupada says, the soul does not undergo the bodily phases. That's something that gives a little foothold, encourages us. At the same time, at least myself, I don't take it lightly. I mean, what Maharaj Parikit is being confronted with, and how wonderfully, magnificently he deals with it, is something we all have to deal with. And it's something that we should be dealing with right now. Again, because we're all mriyamanana, we're all on the verge of death. I don't take it lightly. As he was able to tell, he'll tell Shukadeva Goswami in this canto that, yes, I'm ready. Is there anything else? No, you've completely enlightened me, I'm fearless, I'm ready, I have no problem with any snake bird, anything like that. Let it come. And there's an illustration of, it looks very actually glorious how he was sitting so calmly, and the fire of the snake bird was so poisonous that he erupted in flames. But he was sthitadhi, he was steady intelligence, tasya pragna pratisthita, his intelligence was fixed. So it's not easy, but at the same time, that's our task. How do we do it? By developing a higher taste, as you're all doing. And somehow will that carry us through? It's not so easy. Not to become despondent, really it takes some, what we say, we have to become proactive. You might say, not that we just think about death all the time, but we have to become proactive in learning to tolerate. Like for myself, I'll confess that sometimes I catch myself saying, oh, darn it. You know, I mean, I actually say that. I find myself getting so frustrated and a little bent out of shape, out of silly little things, little disturbances, things that, you know, as we get older, you know, we don't see as well as we used to. We don't, you know, we can't manage things so efficiently, and we lose things, and we forget what we're looking for, and you know, all these wonderful things happen, you know. But we shouldn't become disturbed, you know. Hare Krishna. So I'm just sharing with you my neophyte status, but maybe some of you could identify with it. So yes, the soul doesn't undergo that. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paro pimanate narakam tatvitam chapipadyate. That's the fifth verse, seventh chapter, first canto, Vyasadeva, his realization. That the yaya samohito jiva atmanam tri, that the living entity, he becomes covered over. Paropi manote nartam, he's always transcendental to the modes of material nature, but due to misidentifying himself as a material product, he becomes he suffers the causes and effects of the material world. He becomes implicated. He becomes responsible for his activities due to misidentifying with the body. And then, but the actual situation is described in Bhagavad Gita in many verses. So one is the 18th verse of the second chapter. Avyakta dini bhutani yakto madhyani bharata avyakta nidhananyeva tatra tam paridevana. What is the need for lamentation? Because the soul is manifested is not manifest at the beginning, in the life cycle, we say. And then it's manifest for some time in the middle time, like right now we're in the middle time. And then at the end, again, it becomes unmanifest. So what is the need to grieve? It's just, as was stated in the summary, it's the displays life symptoms. But sometimes we say, well, what's the difference between a living body and a dead body? And the usual answer is, oh, the soul is present in a living body, which is true. But another answer could be, there is no difference. There's no difference between a living body and a dead body, because the body itself is always dead. I don't know if you agree with that. We hear about organic matter and inorganic matter, but actually on a more like spiritually scientific basis, it's dead matter. It's moving because I'm under the guidance of Supersoul, I'm making it move, so to speak. Although I know I'm not the doer, but you know, actually, the Upadras Danumantas Cha, the Supersoul is making everything happen. There are other examples we hear, the example of the lamp we heard. So there are other lamp examples I don't have time to describe, but one is 619, that the like a lamp in a windless place, the mind of the transcendentalist never wavers because he's fixed on the soul. Another lamp example is in chapter 10, where Krishna himself illuminates the living entity to give him special mercy. I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. The last sentence of the summary says, you should fix yourself in meditation upon Lord Vasudeva, and thus the bite of the snake bird will not affect you. Again, for the rest of us, this sounds like a tall order indeed. This level of absorption is indeed samadhi. This is also described in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 6, text 22. What is it? Tam yam ladva chaparam labam manyate nadikam tata yasmin stito natukena gurun api vichalyate. Describing the very advanced Astanga Yogi. He's at the culmination, Samadhi. So then there was about four verses that describe the state of Samadhi. And one is very apropos to this situation of Maharaj Parikshit and our situation, if we can rise to the occasion, is that upon achieving this, this ability to see the self with a pure mind and relish and rejoice in the self and completely in control of the senses and mind fixed. Upon achieving this, he thinks, manyate nadikam tata. He thinks there's no greater adhika, there's no greater gain, he thinks. And then, yasmin stito nadukena, remains steady. The dukena gurun api, even if gurun, what is gurun? Heavy. We hear sometimes guru means heavy. So gurun api vichalyate means he doesn't waver, he doesn't flinch, he doesn't get disturbed. Even in the most extreme kind of duk or pain, or disturbance. That's, Prabhupada would sometimes say, that's the example of becoming very advanced spiritually, is when even when there's cause for disturbance, one does not become disturbed. Prabhupada gives Lord Shiva as an example of that. Parvati remain fixed, at least in that example, exemplary kind of situation. Perhaps the extreme tolerance of the Kshatriyas, like Karna, remember the situation, how did we forget it? It's so graphic, where this horrible insect starts just eating into his thigh, and all his blood was coming out, and he doesn't flinch. He's able to remain controlled. So that's pretty good. Of course, he had, you know, on the subtle platform, he was not beyond fame and infamy. He was very important. Reputation, profile was very, very important for Karna. I'm not criticizing Karna, but in terms of up to that level, but at least in the context, he was able to control so much. Unfortunately, was it Parashuram? Parashuram was not very happy. Oh, you're a Kshatriya. No, what do you mean? You're a Kshatriya because no Brahmana could tolerate such pain like that. Only a Kshatriya would have the ability to tolerate the kind of pain that you're experiencing. Get out of my life. You're not my disciple. Finish. Poor Karna. Another example is Dhruva, the original Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj, he was able to tolerate, and Maharaj Parikit also, he was tolerating hunger and thirst and both cases not even sleeping. And Dhruva Maharaj was going the extra mile by standing on one leg. You see a picture like that, he's in some kind of yoga position. The little boy, but he's in this hatha yoga position where you put your ankle on your knee and you stand up on one leg. And he's standing there for a long time, and he gets increased austerity until he reaches the point where he's only breathing once in a great while. So he's practically even given up. They say he's living on air. And to remain steady like that is also extremely advanced, you might say, in terms of self-control in yoga. But to be 100% fixed is the prerogative of the bhakta. The last thing I wanted to share was, this is the first time I'm traveling carrying this fairly heavy printout of a glossary. So the value of the glossary that I put together over a period of 30 years. Oh, getting old is so interesting. It's organized in terms of topics. So I could have chosen from a few different topics, like material conditioning is the longest topic. There's about 15 pages of terms of that topic. But I chose to share with you a few terms of living entity. Topic called living entity. So some of these terms are apropos. Usually they're parts of shlokas. Often they're terms that Prabhupada specifically points to in the purport, in the Bhaktivedanta purport. So this is from Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad, 4.3.16, quoted here and there, etc., etc., reference. Topic is living entity, and the term is Asango Hi Ayam Purusha. Many of you have heard that. The living entity is always free from the contamination of the material world. And I said, no, this links to 175, which I quoted earlier in today's class about Paropi Manate Nartan, Tatritam Chapitati, that the living entity is always transcendental to the three modes of material nature, even to this body. Actually, we have nothing to do with this body. I know that's hard to understand. Another term is from Bhagavatam 2.9.1, quoted in various places, but it's a term that you may not have heard. Nagate tarta sambandha svapna drashtur ivanjasa. These are worth learning. Translation, there cannot be any meaning of the relationship of the soul and the body, except that it is like a dreaming man creating an imaginary situation. This is all related to this point of gradually we can realize that we're really, really not the body. If we fully realize it's called Siddha level, it means Brahma-Bhuta platform. Couple more. This is from Harivamsa, quoted by Madhvacharya, in turn quoted at 11.2.52 in the purport. This is Sanskrit is as follows. Nakvapi jivam vishnutve samstito moksha evacha. So I guess in some cases, not that Prabhupada picked it up, but the followers of Srila Prabhupada, disciples of Prabhupada, in the after the 10th canto, 13th chapter, the Bhagavatam continued like that. Translation. Under no circumstances should one consider the living entity to be equal to Lord Vishnu, either in conditioned life or in liberation. That's not completely relevant to the specific theme, but anyway, I hope you got something out of it. Anyway, there's a few others that are more relevant, but we're really running out of time, so I don't want to deprive you of the chance to express yourself. Any questions or comments, please? The first one to raise his hand is naturally Madan Maha. So, oh, right, I didn't get to the verse. I just spoke about the summary. I promised I'd say something about the verse. Thank you. What a goof. Sukadeva Goswami said, the Srimad Bhagavatam has elaborately described in various narrations the Supreme Lord of all that be, the Personality of Godhead, Hari, from whose satisfaction Brahma is born and from whose anger Rudra takes birth. That's why I mentioned about Brahma and Rudra. It's in the verse. Short purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given a very elaborate summary of Srimad Bhagavatam in his commentary on this verse. The essence of the great Acharya statement is that unconditional loving surrender to the Supreme Lord Krishna, as described by Shukadeva Goswami, is the highest perfection of life. The exclusive purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is to convince the conditioned soul to execute such surrender to the Lord and go back to home, back to Godhead. Now, really, really quickly, if you'll allow me, I'll just say something out of the verse, which I was supposed to do. If I have your blessings, it'll be really quick. Srila Prabhupada's reference to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's elaborate summary of Srimad Bhagavatam in his commentary on this verse, he points to that. A few other such commentaries include, I'm giving a short list here, there are many others, but these are just like a sampling of, for very different purposes. We have Srila Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha, which is a treatise on Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically or largely dealing with the essential role that the Srimad Bhagavatam plays in Kali Yuga, how it's the perfect vehicle, the perfect scripture to connect us with the Vedas. We who are not qualified to read the Vedas, you have to be a Brahmin. We could become Brahmin, but how do we do it? Because we got the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's mercy. Another one is called the Bhagavat by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's for a radically different purpose, to reach out, reach out to westernized Indians and even Britishers, and present the Bhagavatam in a very user-friendly way, cutting a few corners. Another one is by the same Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and much more orthodox, is called the Marichi Mala, the Srimad Bhagavatam Marichi Mala, the sparkling rays of the Bhagavatam sun. And that consists of many, many verses that are described as the most important verses, but most of them we don't know. I mean, most of us, hardly any of us. I think even Pushkar Prabhu may not know many of the verses in that work. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains to us why the verse is important. And the whole book is divided in terms of different topics. So it's a very good, it's almost like a great study guide to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we have, of course, what is being referred to here in the purport. It's called the Sarartha Darshini by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. You have his comments on all the 12 cantos, including what was cited here about this canto. And then another reference is, guess what? It's the Srimad Bhagavatam commenting on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are many verses, I don't have time, but it's 9 o'clock. So I'll just read one that is enlivening. Sarva vidanta saram hi sri bhagavatam ishyate tadrasamrita trittasya nanyatrasya drati pachit. You hear about the higher taste. This is a higher taste verse. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. Comment or question? I know it's getting late, so make your question short and I promise I'll make my response short.
Maharaj, you mentioned in the class that one should always be conscious of death and even to the point of shivering with fear. And then on the other hand, we learn that one should joyfully engage in Krishna consciousness. So it appears like to put these two things together, it looks like it's a really tough string that you have to tie them with. Can you explain?
Yeah. The Prabhupada said you should study my book scrutinizingly, and if you do it, we'll find some complexity and we'll find some apparent contradiction, and we have to deal with that. That will help us go deeper. So you're right. In the Bhagavatam, despite the verse that I recited from the 11th canto, we go all the way down to the 2nd canto, 2.1.15. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So it's a progressive process. Better not to be in that group described by Yudhisthira Maharaj. The most wonderful thing in the world is nobody gives a hoot, except the owls, but that's another thing. You know what I mean? Nobody cares. I mean, they say, I wish I had time. I can tell an anecdote about this with my father. But it's one thing. It's like cognition and recognition, knowledge and acknowledge. We may intellectually, you know, say yes, of course, death is there. But do we really realize that? I mean, do we really acknowledge it? Do we really recognize it? So stage by stage, first it's really healthy to have a healthy fear of death, and then one can honestly deal with it. It's dishonest to say, I'm not afraid of death. My father told me, I'm not afraid of death. And then a couple of months later he had some alarming symptoms. Oh, I was so frightening. Well, what happened to you not being afraid of death? It's like, I'm not afraid of tigers, because they're not here right now. But if somehow one escaped from the zoo, and there's no zoo near here, but there's a zoo when you go outside. So. But so a tiger just came walking into this room. All of a sudden, we wouldn't take it so lightly. So it shouldn't be that only when death is like the axe right over our neck that then we realize that. So in other words, it's good. It's a healthy fear. We should shake with fear, and that will give us impetus, surrender to the Lord, and then we'll become fearless. But maybe many of you are already beyond that stage. So I would answer your question by saying it's progressive. Any other question or comment? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare
Krishna. No, a little ironic there, but that's okay.
My devotee can't remember me. I will remember him at the time of death.
Okay, so you're kind of like adjusting the pessimism and giving us some optimism. Okay, so let's just try to be a real devotee, to be real devotees. And so, you know, that will apply to us also. There's that story that when Mataji's in a car accident and She couldn't chant. Physically, it was impossible. And then she somehow survived the car accident. It was fatal to some of the other passengers. But just at that point, she saw like a neon sign, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It was lit up right in front of her. So it's a way that Krishna's coming to her in the form of the holy name, just lighting up in front of her. And we do have, we could be inspired by, in many cases, our colleagues in ISKCON when they depart, when they have departed, and they did, in these cases that we see glorious consciousness, glorious remembrance. But even in some cases, which were very sad, we can see a devotee departing and he's like, just seems completely out of it, you might say. Maybe he's taking painkillers or something like that. But what you just mentioned is encouraging for us, for their sake and for our own sake too. But let's try for it. Let's try to live our life in such a way that etavan sankhya yoga abhyam svadharma paranishtaya janma labha parakum sham. What is it? Ante narayana smriti. That the perfection of our life will be that we remember Krishna at the time of death. Ante kali to buddhisha, you know, the verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8. That one who remembers me upon leaving the body, he attains me without fail. There's no doubt of it. So, well, we have to be proactive. I once asked Satsvut Maharaj in 1987 in Puerto Rico. I asked him, so like, when we're approaching death, when we're getting really close to death, does Krishna just make us rise to the occasion? But he was warning. He was saying, don't think it happens automatically. You have to really work for it. Of course, as you say, there is mercy there. But there also has to be some effort. So we have to have a balanced view, you can say. All right, I better stop now. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Vijaya, Srila Vishnu, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur Ki Jai, Thakur Premanandu.